Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe.
And I'm Ryan.
Today, we're here to review George Miller's new epic wasteland adventure, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. Not starring Mad Max in the least. So, let's get into our medium shot now. Tell me, Ryan, what was your expectations going into this? This is your first ever Mad Max movie. Even though it's not really a Mad Max movie, once again, just want to make that clear. And full spoilers ahead for the movie. Doing the housekeeping.
Well, I expected great action from the clips I've seen from Fury Road. And I also expected a different editing style than from most action-packed movies. Mm-hmm. And then after that, didn't really expect much. I was just like, I'm going to go and see a good action movie. That's really it.
Yeah, my expectations were definitely pretty high because Fury Road is personally one of the best action movies I've ever seen. Perhaps one of the best action movies ever made. So what was George Miller's follow-up going to be starring? Oh, it's a prequel with Furiosa? Okay, yeah, she was pretty good in Fury Road. Oh, and it's not Charlize Theron? Oh, okay. Well, the trailers look... Oh, okay, it looks like there's a lot more CGI than in Fury Road. Fury Road was pretty lauded for its heavy use of practical effects. And okay, so the more I learned about Furiosa, the more hesitant I was going in, but that did impact my view of the movie somewhat, but let's get into our close-up now and start reviewing this thing in earnest. So, thoughts? Initial?
I guess first initial thought is that it's good, but I feel like this doesn't really live up to the hype of a Mad Max movie, which is weird to say, coming from me. Like, for someone who hasn't seen a Mad Max movie, mm-hmm. Outside of this. But overall, I enjoyed watching it. I felt like the action was well done. The cinematography was really good. Colors looked pretty. I have some pacing and plot issues, but other than that, I enjoyed it.
I'm going to get this out of the way. In terms of hype for a Mad Max movie, I put this one... personally, middle tier out of the five Mad Max movies. I think Fury Road's the best. Well, okay, I love Fury Road and I love The Road Warrior. Those are peak Mad Max, Mad Max 2 and Mad Max 4. Then Beyond Thunderdome's the worst, personally. That's just the first half of that movie is great and then it just sort of devolves and loses its way with. He discovers a band of lost children and it gets weird. He gets so far away from Thunderdome. This one is somewhere in the middle along with Mad Max 1 in terms of franchise quality. Mind you, out of the five, I really, Beyond Thunderdome is the only one that I don't care for as much, but even that one's better than... Even that one's just below average in terms of quality. Like, none of the Mad Max movies are bad, and this one's just middle of the pack in terms of those. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed with my sky-high expectations coming off of Fury Road, but I'm basically in agreement with you from what you've said. It's just... It's good. I went in expecting a fun... off-the-wall action movie, and that's what I got. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's not anything crazy, but it's just, it's weird because I'll get this out of the way now. I think the action saved this movie, if I'm being absolutely earnest. Especially the convoy scene that happened in, like, the third chapter.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
Yeah, it was just the way everything was shot and how it was all planned out. It wasn't too jump cutty, or wasn't really jump cutty at all, but you could tell what was going on throughout an entire action scene. I really appreciated that.
Flows so nicely. in the editing.
Yeah.
Especially. The I know there was, once again, more CGI here than in Fury Road, but the stunt work's really well handled. The car chase scenes, the cars slamming into each other and flipping and exploding, that's all still really fun. I even like the inventiveness of the crazier sections, like when the guys are parasailing up to the war rig in the desert just to try and get on top of it, and the war boys having the makeshift weapons they've got, like they're fighting with spears, guns, machine guns, flipping maces on the back of the war rig, just anything they can get their hands on. They try to stick some, the bad guys try to stick some dynamite on them, or like there's all kinds of inventiveness with how the convoys are handled and just the action in general. I'm shocked that he's finding new ways, George Miller, to keep car chases interesting after 5 of these things in 40 years.
Yeah, I've really appreciate George Miller's not attention to detail, but actually showing the entire stunt go through. Like when you see someone do a stunt fall in this movie, you actually see the full thing. It's not like 3 separate cuts where it could have been, you know, 3 crazy, or just 3 different takes, or it could be 1 take, you never know. But here you actually see like most of the stunt falls and all that.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that.
Well, I think the thing about the action in this movie and in most of the Mad Max movies in general is that some people might look at the story and say, oh, well, it feels maybe a little lacking because I didn't really understand who the characters were and what they stood for and their worldviews and all that. But George Miller builds character through action mostly. They're at their best and at their worst in the middle of these really intense action scenes. These are the moments that show their resourcefulness, their brutality, their potential mercy. Just this is where the characters really come alive, is in the action scenes. That tells us more about them than the dialogue in this movie does. And that's George Miller's strength as a director. Once again, I think I could have gone for a bit more dialogue and traditional talking scenes, but that's a me hang-up. I'm not as big on visual storytelling because it takes a little bit more to sink in for me. But that's hardly a criticism of, spell it out for me. I need you to tell me what's happening instead of show me. I guess that feels counterintuitive, but I do understand it more, obviously, when it's spelled out. So I respect the visual storytelling in this movie. So, and that's mostly through the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of appreciate the visual storytelling because I feel like a lot of dialogue-heavy movies that have action in it, sometimes the lines that they say are, like, really cheesy or just insane. Yeah. Not to say that... It's weird because, like, I know this movie is not send any realism whatsoever, but some of the dialogue that I heard them say, and it was in the trailer, like, I don't know why, but like, Dementis is like, one of his like final lines, like, can you make it epic or something? I was like, that doesn't fit for some reason. Like, so some of the dialogue choices in this, I didn't fully, like, it didn't fully sit right with me, but the visual stuff made up for it.
Yeah. Well, the dialogue in Mad Max has always been pretty melodramatic and heightened, and just all the sane people died during the resource wars and the apocalypse. It's just these are the survivors, the ones who are willing to do whatever it takes. They're not in their right mind, most of them. They speak in grandiose fashion. They're not normal people. That's part of the charm of the world, if you can get into it, but all of them are basically like that. Max is probably the most normal character in any of these movies, and even then, he's teetering on the, like, that's kind of his whole point, is he was, Max was just a regular cop who, after tragedy strikes, he's just teetering on the balance in this crazy world. These are the kind of people he runs up against everywhere.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah. So, the special effects in this movie were really well done, on the whole. I think the CGI was a bit noticeable in some scenes, and definitely required some suspension of disbelief to make work, more than I've had in many other Mad Max movies. But, whatever. It's, like I said, action's fun.
Yeah, still a good time on the whole. I could definitely notice the CGI, because I did see this in IMAX. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. It was like, the where I noticed it the most was with some of the people's movements. It was just like really floaty in the distance or whatever, or in some fights. Not all of them, but just in the ones where it's like a real quick, I don't even know how else to describe it, but if you just look out for it, you can see, oh, that guy's floating for a second there. Like, physics wasn't taken into account. And it could just been, like, a budget thing or a time thing, but overall, the effects were done pretty well. I know, not to the level of Fury Road, but overall, I enjoyed the effects of this movie more than I can say for some of the bigger budget movies that I've seen recently. So
I also think pretty damn good. The big thing that I think helps set the action apart is its sound design. The explosions, the guns, the car engines, especially the cars, everything sounds loud and imposing and dangerous and just locks you into this world. It's, I mean, I'm not a big car guy myself, but it pumps me up listening to the engines purr and roar, and it's just cool. Just the
sound design was really well done. Especially I think in like the opening scene, I guess the prologue or chapter one or whatever, where the mother's being, or the mother's like chasing to get Furiosa, and then when she gets her and then runs away, just hearing the bikes in the distance kind of added the tension of it. And then there's all sorts of different sound design throughout this movie that just really immersed me into the movie, which is really good.
I also love the camera work as well. It's very dynamic with its long tracking shots. And I mean, I know this is in conjunction with the editing too, but it's wide. It shows you what's happening, whether it's CGI or practical. You're seeing it all play. And I think that's why I was still immersed, even when the CGI was a bit wonky, was because it was still comped in with practical shots. And I could tell, I'm like, this is one element of it that's a little whatever, but I'm still seeing everything. It's not like in most things where I think the bad CGI stands out worse, because they're jump cutting so fast that I break my immersion and I'm just like, I can't even tell what's happening. I'm just noticing bad effects. This, I'm still locked into the story and my eye sort of wanders. Oh, that's okay. Sure. But I know what's happening. My brain is still focused more on the action than on the shortcomings of anything going on, because most of it in the scenes are good. Most of what's happening is technically very, very well handled. And is everything in the frame perfect? No, but the cinematography, the sound effects, the special effects, the camera work, the choreography, the stunt work, it's masterfully done. That's the biggest selling factor of this movie. That's why we talk about the action so much. It's just, can't go wrong with it.
Yeah, this is definitely the biggest selling point for this movie. Is if you want to see a kick-ass, awesome action movie, this is the one to go see right now. Just for, like all the technical stuff, the cinematography, the sound design, the camera punching in, everything, just how everything moves so fluidly and beautifully, and it doesn't distract you whatsoever. It's very, very well done.
Yes. Well, maybe we should get into some of the plot stuff now, which I'm a little more mixed on. I mean, okay, what I'll say is, you and I were talking about this the other day, but I found it pretty surprising that, and this was marketing setting my expectations again, but I expected Anya Taylor-Joy to be the main star of this as Furiosa, and then I was somewhat pleasantly surprised to find that she was only in half the movie, where this younger actress, what was her name?
Aaliyah Brown?
Sure. I was surprised to find that she was the lead for half this movie. And personally, I liked that first half better. It was more interesting, kept me guessing a little more. Having seen Fury Road, I knew where it was going to go pretty much at a certain point when she started hanging around Immortan Joe in the Citadel. I'm like, okay, well, I sort of see the path this is on, but I had no idea where it would go when she was a kid.
Really? I had the opposite effect. I was like, where the fuck is Anya Taylor-Joy? And not in a sense where it's like, oh, they're marketing lied to me, but I was like, damn, they're really taking their time in this second chapter to really, like, build up the Fury Road characters and this Dementis guy. They should have called this Furiosa and Dementis, if I'm being honest, because he's probably has more focus in half the first half of the movie than she does, which is pretty insane. See,
what I thought was interesting, I noticed right away that in the credits, opening credits of the movie, Chris Hemsworth was credited before Anya Taylor-Joy, and I thought that was a weird choice at the time. But in retrospect, he's in more of the movie than anybody. He's basically in Act One all the way to the end. He's got more screen time than.
I could have sworn he was after, but I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he was before her.
I know they did the weird thing where it's like she's on one side, disappears, or the name or whatever, and then disappears, and then right after it's the next person's name. But it's whatever.
I mean, you saw it more recently than I did, so maybe I'm off on that. But I thought I remembered something weird like that happening, or maybe it was just that she wasn't the first billing in the movie. I think there were a few names
before
her.
I think she was, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I still think it's interesting that she was in it less than expected. Though I did read that they apparently did some effects work on what'd you say, Aaliyah Brown is her name? They did some effects work on her face to make her look more like Anya Taylor-Joy. The older the character was supposed to get, they sort of blended their faces together to make the transition into Anya Taylor-Joy.
Or like they deepfaked her face?
Something like that.
That's stupid.
You didn't notice.
Notice it, but all right.
Yeah, sure. I think it's more Aaliyah Brown in the first couple scenes, but just before the switchover, they slowly morphed her features.
All right.
Which is an interesting choice. I mean, it's just a tool in the filmmaking arsenal. I'm not gonna disparage it because I didn't even notice it until I read up on it later. It's, and it did help my immersion because I remember thinking, oh yeah, that kid looks like Anya Taylor-Joy. That was good casting. It was just good effects, really. Which,
yeah, cool. I guess because I didn't even know.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
So the movie starts with Furiosa getting kidnapped from the Green Place by Dementis' biker goons. This was a pretty effective opening, personally. It's weird to see green at all in a Mad Max movie that's mostly just red, sandy desert. I love the vibrancy of the colors in the Green Place, so contrasted with the deep red sands of the rest of the movie. It just makes such a stark contrast between these places. And I like seeing her resourcefulness as a little kid, cutting the bikes and going off on her own to try and save her friend and sabotage these guys so that they can't come back and tell anyone about this paradise. And then she gets kidnapped for her trouble. It was also a really cool chase when her mother's tracking them through the desert. She sort of felt like a force of nature, just getting on the bike, and they can hear the bike in the distance. And it was just kind of, it was a cool... Yeah. And once this is where it struck me right away. I'm like, oh, so this is what this movie's going to be. Not a lot of dialogue, more character through action, where she's just hunting them through the desert, stealing out, swapping out the fuel and the bike wheels when one of the bike goes down, sniping them from a distance. It was an effective opening to set up what this world is and who these characters are and what the stakes are. There's an actual peaceful place in the wasteland, and the bad guys can't get there, or they'll definitely take advantage. Got it. Okay. But now she's so far from home, she doesn't know how to get back home. So, I mean, she does make a star map for herself on the tattoo, but she keeps just getting hauled further and further away from home with no way to get back. Which, I like the detail of the star map being her map home, because I believe in Fury Road, I haven't seen it for a while, she kind of knew the general direction, but she didn't know the exact way. So I like that when her arm got cut off, that was the arm with the star map. So that helps explain why it was so difficult for her to get back home. She lost the most obvious route that she wrote down as a child, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the whole star map stuff with her, and it did seem, it's weird because it's like, I'm only thinking, it's just how my brain works, and how like the negatives of a film outweigh some of the pros a lot of the time, which my critical brain taking over, and it was just like, I felt really in chapter two that they just forgot the movie was about Furiosa for a bit. It was like they were setting up the Citadel gas town.
Yeah. Bullet farm.
I guess for people who hadn't seen Fury Road, or just be like, hey, we're going back to these places. And
well, okay, yes, like, and no. Fury Road started at the Citadel. The Citadel was a big part of that. Immortan Joe and the War Boys, they were the bad guys of Fury Road. But this is the first time in any Mad Max movie where we actually get to see Gastown and Bullet Farm and understand the politics of these places during peacetime. And I think that was the big deal. As somebody who's watched all these movies, we only get snippets of this wasteland lore throughout them. This is the first time you actually get to see the wasteland politics between the leaders of the Citadel and Gastown and Bullet Farm, the three major fortresses hoarding the three biggest resources, bullets, water, and fuel, and how they have a tenuous alliance at best, trade with each other on these caravans, screw each other over, and how Dementis, inserting himself into this situation, lights a match on this fragile piece in an already crazy wasteland. So that was a huge... Like, so I understand your criticism there as somebody who is just coming in, but as somebody who is invested in this world, all that lore felt like, wow, this is the first time I'm seeing this. And I already kind of know who Furiosa is, so this is cooler to me than seeing what Furiosa is going to be doing locked in a cage as a child, so...
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a perspective thing.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was something that was already set up or not. But no, yeah.
Not really.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like, I liked how much, I think I read somewhere, Furiosa in total only has like 30 lines. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that's a sick part of her character.
Woman of action.
And I think when finally Anya Taylor-Joy comes in, she's just a badass throughout the entire movie.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
She did a great job. Especially on that convoy scene, the first one. when she's hiding under the war rig for a bit and then makes her way up to help fight with Praetorian Jack. Mm-hmm. It's just that whole scene is... That whole scene saved this movie for me. I'm just going to say it. Like, I wasn't checking my phone, but I was like, I could check my phone right now and not miss anything for those first two chapters. That's where I was feeling. And then finally we got into, like, some... Not to say that the first two chapters were bad, but it was just, like, a lot of setup, but not for the character that it came to see.
It's interesting, but not necessarily super engaging.
Yeah, like, they focus so much on Dementis's character, which I don't hate, because he is a pretty awesome character, and Chris Hemsworth plays him pretty well.
Chris Hemsworth, it's refreshing to see.
I don't know how he drives that bike chariot. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's a cool thing where he's got, like, three bikes tied up, and it looks like a chariot. Yeah. Like, how is he physically driving? But it doesn't matter. I'm letting my realism go out the window there, because it just looks cool.
Chris Hemsworth's having the time of his life in this movie. He's my favorite thing about Furiosa by a mile. I know he's supposed to be the villain, but I found myself caring about him more than her. Just because, like, I related to her when she was a kid. Oh, this is sad, a kid getting kidnapped and she's trying to get back home. And then I never really learned much more about her. Like, Anya Taylor-Joy was great. Aaliyah Brown was great. The performances were solid. But Chris Hemsworth is magnetic. He's the most scene-stealing actor of the movie every time he's on. He's fun. He's charismatic. I kind of get his worldview. He's got a pretty clear goal, too. He's just trying to get as much power as he possibly can. He's crafty. Like that scene when he tricks the residents of Gastown into letting them in because he starts shooting his own guys up so that they're like, oh man, the caravan's under attack. And then like, whoop, I just got into Gastown and I'm going to take it all over. And then he destroys Bullet Farm 2, threatens to take on the Citadel. He's just very ambitious, and I love that he's the costume design. He's got the teddy bear strapped to him at all times.
Yeah.
The costume design in this movie was so fun too.
I love how his costume changes throughout the movie. Like, he's all white at the beginning of the story, and then that flare goes off near him, and then he's red for most of it, and then by the end, he's got, like, his cape turns black. Goes from, like, white to red to black.
I like at the end, now he starts calling himself.
Character progression of him.
He starts calling himself the Dark Dementis.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's a nice, like, visual cue as well to sort of show how Dementis, like, views himself and then also where his mindset is at the in the story.
Definitely. At the start, he's in white. He's nearly like this wasteland messiah. He's kind of chill. He's got a good following. And then he starts seeing red. He gets to the Citadel and he starts seeing red. It's like, okay, I'm going to bring war. I'm getting too ambitious with this place. And then the Dark Dementis, he's just bringing darkness across the land. His powers corrupted everything. And it's just overly destructive. And I think that's a big theme of this movie is just... The world is a fragile place, and over-ambitious people can just make that worse. Things are barely held together with duct tape and string as it is, and it only takes one person who's just going in like a bull in a china shop and just tearing everything up. I'm like, come on! Like, we've only got three big fortresses for a couple resources here, man, and you're, like, coming in, destroying everything. We had a thing going. Like, yeah, we had dictatorships, but people had water, bullets, and fuel. Now you're making sure people are basically getting nothing. So he's just tearing down the entire system. Not a great system, mind you, but he's not making it better.
Yeah.
It's all for selfish power grab.
Mm-hmm. It's a flawed system, but he's fucking up that flawed system. And not in a good way.
Definitely. I also love Tom Burke as Praetorian Jack.
Yeah, he was badass. I loved his whole look.
For sure. He's another one who I'm like, okay, yeah, Furiosa, I understand. Like, I think I just like the characters who talk more. Like, Furiosa, once again, I didn't really relate to her a lot. She's just cool. But Praetorian Jack, I'm like, okay, you're a really skilled driver. And I think the scene that endeared me most to him was when he kicks Furiosa out of the car, and then he goes back to her later, and he's like, okay, you're pretty skilled. I could use you on the caravan. I'll put in a good word. And then I like how their partnership forms on the road, and he's the one who teaches her a lot of the things she knows about being more tactful and a skilled driver. And their relationship was good. I like how she went back for him too. He was willing to sacrifice himself for her at Bullet Farm, but then she went back for him too. And one of the most impactful scenes of the movie was when Dementis has him chained up on the bikes, and they just start driving him around till he gets bored. And I like how they didn't even show him dead. They didn't have to show a gruesome corpse or anything. They just sort of, well, he's dead. And you just know that. It's not, you basically know as soon as he gets tied up and starts getting hauled around, mm-hmm. like, nope, Praetorian Jack's done. Okay.
Yeah. He was a pretty awesome side character to watch. And just sort of, and it's a nice, like, partner to have for Furiosa as well. Like, to learn all the skills and have them work together. Them as a team is really awesome. I really enjoyed, like, the multiple attempts to get away from the Horde after Bullet Town, because there were so many ups and downs, and I loved that type of storytelling where it looks like they're about to get away, but then something happens, and it's just a lot of, like, it's like really basic storytelling, but it's done so well where it's like, we do this, but then this happens, so then I do this, but then this happens. It's like, oh, here's an obstacle, let's see if we get over it. And for it sure. doesn't end well, but
I thought as soon as they got out of, I thought there was a lot of times that Bullet Farm scene was going to end like, oh, they destroyed the war rig. Oh, okay, I guess they got out. Oh, nope. Okay, they took down the entire tower, and then they got away. Oh, okay, I guess that's, oh, wait, no, Dementis is chasing them. Oh, well, maybe they'll get away here. They just got over the cavern. Oh, no, they just go around the cavern. Okay, there's another way around it. And then they just, you're right, it's a perfect back and forth of not even dragging it out. It keeps it interesting. You might think off the top of your head, oh, it might be a little bit much, but the whole sequence stays engaging. Let's see.
Yeah.
Let's see what else here. Other supporting cast members I liked. I liked Immortan Joe and his sons as well. They were creepy. Mm-hmm. The one son especially, who's like
the big dumb idiot. Furious.
Yeah, he was super creepy.
It was creepy, and I feel like I mentioned it at the beginning, but like the pacing issue that I had here was when the big dumb idiot, who I think his name is Rictus, if I'm reading the name correctly, it was
Rictus and Scrotus.
Yeah. Like, he steals her to clearly probably assault her, and then she gets away, and then there's that time lapse of her hair in that forms a tree, which I don't know if that's referenced at all, if that's a reference to anything or not, but no, I just remember that scene ending, and then like 10 to 15 minutes later being like, oh, so that entire scene is pointless. I was like, that literally went nowhere. That could have been entirely cut. Not to say that I wanted to see any, I don't want to see any assault whatsoever, and I hate seeing that shit now, but it's like,
no, okay, I don't,
we now know this guy's a creep, even though we can assume they're all creeps because their dad's a fucking psychopath who has multiple slave wives. Well, he gets taken, she runs away, and then the scene's over.
Well, to me, that showed her, what do you call it, just her craftiness, I guess. She saw that this guy was interested in her, and instead of being completely ignorant of what's going to happen to her, she's observant. She knows what this guy is like and what he'll probably do. So she takes advantage of that completely. She cuts off all her hair, makes a wig, fully expecting him to come for her at some point. And then he does, and she takes her moment. She knew that was going to happen. She was planning ahead and took an opportunity. It's just to show, even as a kid, she's still... And of course, that made a difference, because once she got away, they just assumed, okay, we have no idea what happened to this kid, but then she can't get away, so she just makes herself into one of the little war boys and just kind of hides out in the Citadel after that. I think it kind of made sense from a plot mechanic here, because these guys at the Citadel, they're super sexist. The whole plot of Fury Road, which is basically the ending of this movie, where she frees all the concubines from their cell and smuggles them onto the war rig. That's how they treat women at the Citadel. All the boys get to paint themselves white and go onto their war rigs and spray their mouths and die gloriously and go to Valhalla. The women get chained up and they're just wives for Immortan Joe. So that was really, once she got sold to these guys as a young woman, how do you get out of that? Well, she needed to be smart about it. And that's why after the fact, she was accepted back, because then she came back with Praetorian and Jack, who put in a good word for her, and she proved her mettle as a war rig operator. So it's like, okay, well, she's a bit of an independent agent here. She's kind of working for all these different places, so we can't just lock her up now. So she needed to... That's just the way this society is at the Citadel, so she needed a way out of that at the time. Because she wasn't just going to live there once she got put there.
No, I get that. It was just, I've seen like 5 scenes already of her being crafty.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So like one more. It was like, okay, I get it. And we get this dude's a creep. Like, I get how the whole society thing works. It was just like, it was just at that point, it was like, fuck, we're only on chapter 2, and I have no idea how many chapters there are.
My thing with the chapters is, I feel like
all the chapters... Is this a normal thing, or is this just Furiosa?
Just Furiosa.
That's stupid.
The thing with the chapters I found was, every chapter I feel like was paced pretty well as chapters. They were effectively their own short films, which told their own beginning, middle, and end stories, and I think they were very good that way. But when you combine all that into a 2-hour-plus movie, the pacing felt very, very strange as an overall product. But if you were to just watch this movie on home video or streaming, you could just stop at the end of every one of these chapters, and I feel like it's less jarring, nearly like a miniseries of like 20-minute chapters or whatever. That nearly might be a more engaging way to watch this movie than as a film.
Yeah, it felt like a limited series all jumbled together.
Yeah.
Which is strange to say, but it's definitely what it felt like. Because there are just chapters of her life. It's not like one continuous whole plot thread. It's just basically, if you wanted to say it, it's like Furiosa is just trying to get back home, but then there's all these roadblocks in the way, but it's not really about that. It's more like Furiosa is trying to get home and here's Dementus. That's how I felt like this movie is, especially the first half. And he doesn't disappear, but they focus more on her in like chapters 3 and 4, and then when she visits Gastown, which is... But I haven't seen any other like Fury Road movie. What the fuck's going on with all these citizens like freaking the fuck out everywhere? Like, I don't. It's just like, it was not that it was weird and not understandable to me. It was just like, okay, I can tell Dementus doesn't have Gastown under control because of dialogue that they told me about, and then also just the visual storytelling as well. and how they have to do like in a giant circle in Gastown just to leave. But also yeah. it's like the same in the Citadel, or like these, the normal ass citizens, or like these cave dweller type people, or it's just, it's very strange. I don't know. It's just very strange and jarring.
Yeah.
At the same time, where it's like, oh, I think it's going to go one way, but then it's just like that necromancer lady, or the lady who was like in the cave and had all these different body parts. Mm-hmm. I was like trying to like tell Furiosa to stay. I was like, oh, this is going to go somewhere. No, she leaves. So I'm like, is that a cameo? Like it was, everything was so confusing. And this is just a personal gripe because I haven't seen the other ones. And it's not a gripe against the movie itself.
I think that's one of the most interesting things about your perspective here is I'm coming at it as a fan of the franchise, and you're coming at it as a newbie. So your opinion is very interesting because I don't know how many people do choose this as their first Mad Max movie. Even most of the people who haven't seen the old ones probably at least saw Fury Road first. So they're coming at it with at least that in mind. So it's, yeah, like it's very, I love to hear your thoughts on this. Just as someone who's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm just getting dropped into this. And was this a reference to something? Is this?
Yeah.
Just for the year?
I mean, like most of it, I know who Martin Joe was. I mean, I've seen the marketing over the past decade. And the world building itself makes sense just because of how it's explained here and then other pieces of media. And then just, I know how storytelling works in post-apocalyptic worlds. So it wasn't that confusing. I understood we were in the outback. I liked the world building. I liked the car. Like, it was only just the really little stuff that made me confused. Whereas, like, that old woman in the cave, all the like, just normal citizens who were, like, kind of cave dwellery, but also, like, insane. I don't know. I don't know how else to explain it besides me being confused. Because it seemed like every single, like, extra, that's all I'll just say, every extra was just either begging for something or, like, in a frenzy. And I didn't fully understand that.
Well, in Fury Road, basically they show how the Citadel's sort of broken down into different tiers of society. The main tiers are Immortan Joe and his sons and his concubines. They all live up at the top of the Citadel. They get all, like, him and his generals, they got all the best resources and everything just for them. Then there's the war boys, the ones who are lucky enough to be pulled from the dregs of society, and they get their fancy body paint. They get to ride on the caravans. They get to defend the Citadel. They get to die for Immortan Joe and go to Valhalla. It's a religious rite of passage. They're like these zealots who follow Immortan Joe. And then there's basically everyone else who lives at the Citadel, who basically are just, as far as I can tell, just what we see here. They're just kind of crazy and in a frenzy, and they're just hoping to God Immortan Joe's going to give them their next splash of water from the Citadel, because he's got this waterfall thing that he activates. They're all just kind of waiting for their portions of water, hoping that they can survive. And that's just how most people around this wasteland are. They're crazy unless they're part of a community, which I think is a recurring thing in Mad Max. The more isolated these people are further away from resources, the crazier things get. The ones who have more resources are a bit more in their right mind.
Okay. Got it.
They just I
could have assumed that, but I was just also like, again, this is just coming from a new person where it's like, why are we cutting to these people if you're not going to explain it? But again, it's like the fifth film in the franchise that they really need to explain it. And no, the answer is no. Of course they don't.
Well, yeah. See, this is what I'm getting listening to you here is this movie is strange because it relies a lot on things we've seen in past Mad Max films to understand it. But also at the same time, I feel like it's nearly trying to explain things for people like you who haven't seen anything. But it's, so it's ending up in this weird middle ground of, okay, well, you need more context than you gave us. But also everyone who's seen other stuff already knows exactly what this is. So why is it in here? So it,
right.
it tried to hit this middle ground and I guess sort of succeeded. Because it gave me as a fan more context for things that I'm like, oh, well, I didn't need to know that, but cool. Now I understand how things work a little better. And for you, it was more, okay, kind of cool, I guess, but I'm confused and I don't really know why this is in here. So, strange choices.
Yeah. I mean, that's always an issue that films have when they do a spinoff or just whenever a franchise grows bigger is when new people do come in. You always have to play that game of, all right, how much do we explain? How much do we, you know, don't explain? How much do we need to explain? Mm-hmm. And this is the first time in a while I think I've gone into a franchise new and gone with the latest project.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of one where, like, I did the homework first.
I always
I didn't do the homework first, but...
mostly to my detriment.
Yeah. So, from what I can gather as someone who is just come in fresh-faced, I think everything was explained pretty well. I don't think anything was... it wasn't any forced explanation. Everything felt natural. And also felt like they weren't feeding me information. It was just like, hey, we're going here. You guys probably know what this is, but for people who don't, here's what it's called. And yeah. I have this one memory of watching it in the theater of it's in the like the final chase scene when they're coming out of Bullet Town. Or no, when Furiosa's killing off all the people that of like the Dementis' hordes.
Yeah.
It's like that biker gang with like the spiky armor in the, and they killed the guy with the one eye who's literally got like an eye missing. And yeah. I could tell, I knew that that was like a cameo group because of the guy five rows to my left was like really giddy about it. It was like, oh shit. Like he was really happy to see them. Or like
I don't remember who they are personally, but I don't know. Maybe they were...
I know they're in Fury Road because in the compilation of the end credits of that movie, there's clips of them in Fury Road. So yeah, that's where I assumed they were from.
I haven't seen Fury Road in like 8-9 years, so it's... I need a refresher on that, but... yeah. So... yeah, this movie is... yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. It's the action and world building are really well done. The acting's great. The production design, costumes are great. Color grading, editing, camera work. Score's pretty good too. Like, I think everything behind the camera is masterfully done. It's
technically is a very good movie.
Most of the problems with this movie are just the characterizations and plot and dialogue. That's really the pacing as well. Pacing, plot, and dialogue. But everything else is incredible. So yeah. Overall, I say the movie's worth a watch, at least, especially if you're looking for good high-octane action movie.
I think people should not wait until this is out of the theaters, because seeing this in the theater on a big screen is really awesome, because then you get to see all the action in like the best quality ever.
And what are you watching instead? Be honest.
Yeah. What are you watching instead? If, or whatever that fucking imaginary friends movie is.
Yeah.
I've heard decent things about it. I'm just joking around.
Deadpool and Wolverine isn't out for another month. Go see this one.
I know, we have to wait so long. And they keep feeding us, like, not trailers, but, like, it's weird. We're back into that realm of
good marketing.
Superhero advertisement, like, marketing.
Yeah.
Like, there's the Heineken marketing, and then there's the movie theater one where it's like, I was like, wow, we're back. We're so back, boy. We're back into this realm of marketing. It's wild.
It's fun.
It's going to be huge. Yeah.
So, you got a question of the week for me?
Yeah. Which, Joe,
okay,
my podcast partner, which apocalyptic world would you rather live in? One, like in Mad Max, where it's all dry and everything, sand everywhere, dune-ish. Or, like in Waterworld, where you're on a boat everywhere, and maybe there's a couple islands, but you're just fighting, like Kevin Costner. I haven't seen the fucking movie, but...
Me neither.
Everything's water. We have a similar question this week.
You know what? I think I gotta go with Mad Max, because I'm more comfortable with motor vehicles than I am with boats. And if you fall off your motor vehicle, you just end up in the desert. Oh, sand sucks. It's coarse. It's rough. It's irritating. It gets everywhere. But water drowns you. And it's got sharks and other many scary things. Dinosaurs in the deep blue. Water is terrifying, and I'm less comfortable on it. So I think I got to go with Mad Max, because besides everyone being crazy, which is a given in post-apocalypse, it's more familiar. If you scrounge for food and pray to a Morton Joe for water, you might be okay.
Yeah. So I have an actual phobia of open water. I think it's pronounced, I have it here. Jesus Christ. Thalassophobia. Whoever made that up, go fuck yourself.
Every phobia is...
Yeah, it's not...
It's hard to pronounce.
I can go swimming. I like to swim. But it's like, I don't know what it is. I think it's just from movies that I've seen in my life where I'm in open water and I'm like waiting for the boat to swing by, like if I go tubing or water skiing or whatever and I fall off and I'm just waiting there in the life vest. I feel like something's going to grab my ankle and just drag me down.
That's Jaws.
It's the worst. Yeah, it's the worst feeling ever. I think I had like a TikTok saved on my... just on my profile for a while of just like pictures that induce that type of shit, that type of phobia. And it's not, it just makes me feel terrible. Also, once you fall off your vehicle in Waterworld, that vehicle could be fucking 50 feet away and you're never catching up to it again.
Yeah, right.
But in Mad Max, you can at least, you know, run towards it.
And Mad Max isn't Dune. You don't have sandworms picking you up from the ground. The desert's scary, but it's survivable. Waterworld is just water everywhere and not a drop to drink. It's all salt water.
You can't drink it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would suck. Now, would you rather be Dune? Dune World or Waterworld?
probably Dune. Because unless I'm House Atreides.
Yeah. They had a rough go of it.
Unless you're
Paul.
He had a pretty rough go of it, too.
But now he's manipulated the Fremen into becoming Messiah. So just lie to a bunch of natives, Joe, and you're good. Also, if I'm going to die by the sandworm, at least I get to do that really weird walk. Now, at least I have some fun before I go out, you know?
If you do that in Mad Max, you just look stupid.
You look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Dementis will come at you like, what the fuck are you doing, mate? And just shoot you, probably. Or no, he won't shoot you. He'll just send his whore to beat you to death.
Yeah. See, I've also got to give Mad Max World more credit, though, because it was basically the first post-apocalyptic world. There were dystopias before Mad Max, but just the idea of, like, crazy people in road leathers out in the desert is the de facto thing we think of post-apocalypse. Mad Max basically started that. I don't think anything else really did that before these movies. They define what we think of as a post-apocalypse. Scarce resources and crazy people. And yeah, it's a good time. Well, I think that does it for this episode of Close Up. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Thought Plane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, where I explain the old Star Wars Expanded Universe to Ryan. Till next time.